Connected with Ruben Torres, another episode, and we are hanging out today with Frankie J. Had a chance to go and sip some coffee, and we got to hang out outside in Chula Vista, and just kind of catch up, man. And he's a great dude representing San Diego, multi-platinum artist, Grammy-nominated R&B star, doing his thing, and we caught up. Great dude. He helped me out with my my toy drive event last year, and you know, he's making moves, and I was honored to catch up with him, and you know, he kind of takes us on the journey of what his career has been so far, and it's an honor, and it was a blessing to sit and talk with him. Hope you guys learned something from this great man, and we are about to get into this. Before that, I wanted to go ahead and plug up our boys over at Milton Motion, miltonmotion.com. Make sure you check out my boy Tim Hernandez doing his thing. He's creating all kinds of cool he's doing a lot of behind the scenes stuff with Emilio Nara's Foundation, which helps the kids with cancer, and he's all over the place helping people, doing stuff. He's producing podcasts, building websites, doing all kinds of stuff. He takes care of all our stuff. So make sure you check him out, miltonmotion.com. Now let's get into this with Frankie J.
Hey, what's up? It's Frankie J, and you're with my man Ruben Torres on Connected. Straight Connected, baby. Get connected, connected. Connected with Ruben.
Yo, if you're C-O-N-E-C-T-A-D-O, you already know about the show, so let's go. It's your music and lifestyle, fashion profile, the entertainment source for everything you want to know about. North to the south, the east to the west side, stay connected with Ruben Torres worldwide, so let's go. Across the globe, well respected, beasting on an industry. Connected.
Frankie, thanks for coming out, man.
Thanks for having me, Ruben.
Dude, we out here.
It's my pleasure, man.
Right in your part of town, out here in
Chula
Vista.
Yeah, we're in the East Lake in Chula Vista, Proctor Valley.
Yeah, man.
Don't say Proctor Valley, man. People get scared.
Dude, I was scared. All the stories from back in the day, man.
The crazy stuff, man. Yeah. Back when there was no houses, it was just nothing but dirt.
Dude.
The hills.
I was telling my daughter the stories of all the crazy stuff that used to happen out here, man.
It's crazy. Oh, yeah.
But thanks for coming out, man. I know.
Of course.
You know, I've been trying to reach out to do some stuff with you for a while, and I know you're a busy man.
My pleasure, man. Yeah, thank God, man. We've been working a lot lately, traveling, and as a matter of fact, in about a week, I head to the Philippines. I'm out in Manila for about four days.
Wow.
Doing a couple of shows out there. There's a convention thing called ToyCon.
Nice.
Kind of similar to the whole Comic Con thing, and I guess they're. Launching some new toys out there.
Nice.
And so I was invited to go out and you know, do a couple of performances out for the Toy Con. So I'm excited about that. Never done that before.
You got an action figure you're releasing?
An action figure. It's called the Frankie J action figure.
And you pull the string in the back and he sings.
And it starts singing, dude. Yeah, it starts singing Sugar Sugar.
Yeah, that's a good one, dude. Now you gotta patent that and put it out, dude.
Dude, it's all branding, man. It's the branding thing.
There you go. Hey, so for those that don't know Frankie J and who you are and what you've done, you know, I wanted to kind of introduce some of the audience that may not know who Frankie J is, and kind of connect them with who you are. So you're a Latino artist that started, you started when you were a kid.
Yeah, I was about 15 years old, started with a genre of music called freestyle music. Yeah. Very, you know, very popular in the 80s, early 90s. You know, artists like George Lamont, artists like TKA, artists like Johnny O and the Cover Girl, Sweet Sensation,
Stevie B.
How can I forget Stevie, man? You know, those were the sounds that were happening, you know, during those days. Were very popular at radio. And so I grew up with that. At the age of 15, I got signed to a Canadian label, believe it or not. This fellow, you know, Mexicano, who was born in Tijuana, raised in San Diego, gets signed to a Canadian label. Like, go figure, you know. And you know, got signed as a kid, as the name Frankie Boy. and just, you know, worked on music here with a few friends of mine that were, you know, high schoolers, you know, and in college, in Southwestern College, they were producing music, and just got involved through my brother, my older brother, and it was pretty much the baby steps into the industry, you know, learning what the business was like and what it was about. Still very green, obviously very young. But yeah, that was how it all began.
Yeah. And so you went by Frankie Boy back
Frankie
then.
Boy, man.
And then you also had Cisco. You went by the name
Cisco.
Oh
yeah,
for
the
a
name
bit.
Cisco was when I joined the Cumbia Kings.
Yeah, yeah.
The Cumbia Kings, the boy band, the band that was from Texas again. Yeah. You know, I'm over here going through, you know, here out of California and getting to know these people from out of state. Yeah. You know, obviously the fans who knew or who know who Cumbia Kings is obviously a band that started in Corpus Christi, the brother of the late Selena. His name is A.B. Quintanilla. And yeah, man, just became the lead singer, one of the lead singers there of the band, and was there for about 4 years doing nothing but cumbia. Some English here and there, but the majority of our shows were predominantly more cumbia based, you know, Spanish. And yeah, man, just traveled with them for quite some time and got my feet wet on the Latin side and had a good time, you know, traveling with them.
How did that happen? Like, how did you end up connecting with Cumbia Kings? Because they're out in Corpus Christi. You're San Diego boy.
I know, man. It's like I'm connecting with all these people that are not even from Cali.
Yeah.
Well, I went to Texas about, well, it was in the 96, 97 year. Connected with a few people out there in Texas. Did a couple of shows with the whole freestyle fusion. And back in the days, man, there was an artist by the name of Angelina. I don't know if you remember Angelina.
Yeah, I remember Angelina.
And she had a really, really big song called Release Me. Big, big fan of hers, and had a huge crush on on Angelina. And, you know, when I was in Texas doing these freestyle shows, there was a good friend of mine named John Ramirez, who I actually stayed with living out there in Austin, Texas. And he was kind of like my manager, pretty much. And I would tell him, like, hey, man, I want to do some shows here in Texas, and I know Angelina's coming to San Antonio. You know, I want to open up for her. So I did. He actually got me to open up for her at this place called Kaboom's in San Antonio. And there I met a guy by the name of Charles Chavez, who later on became my actual manager. But through him was how I was connected to A.B. Quintanilla, because he knew him. Charles was a very well-known DJ in the Texas area, and just connected us. And I auditioned for A.B. on the phone. I sang a song called Last Night by the group As Yet. I don't know if you remember As Yet, R&B group.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, that's how I got involved with Cumbia Kings, and the rest is history. Pretty much, you know, I came back to San Diego, worked a couple of jobs here just to try to make ends meet. And when I did the audition for AB, he pretty much said, you're coming back down to Texas and you're going to stay here. And I just said, you know, all right, that'll work. Yeah. And my parents were, you know, very supportive, but at the same time, you know, did not want me to get heartbroken if the whole, you know, music thing
didn't work out.
Yeah, it didn't work out. And they wanted me to go to college, and I did, but, you know, just kind of did like a half semester or half a year. I did one semester, and it just wasn't for me, man. I just said, I want to do music no matter what. And so I stayed in Texas.
And you come from a musical background.
I do, actually. Yeah. I do. My grandfather and my father were, you know, singers. My grandfather was a musician, played violin for the Catholic Church. You know, was always every Sunday, every Saturday, every weekend, you know, doing he was doing rehearsals with, you know, the band that he was in. My father when he was younger, 18, 19 years old, he used to sing a lot of the Moonlight songs. The Moonlights were a big, you know, group in Mexico. And he would do tardeadas, which were like parties in, you know, during the day, or quinceañeras or weddings or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, that's what he would do when he was younger. And then he married my mom and just stopped doing it. So, but I do have that musical background. So I guess that's how I ended up being able to do the whole music thing as a kid.
At what age did you know, like, okay, this is it. I want to be a singer.
Oh, man. I want to say when I was in junior high. I mean, as a kid, I loved music. You know, 5, 6, 7 years old, I was always performing Michael Jackson songs in the living room of our house and our grandparents' living room. So I guess as a kid, I always had this thing for music. But at the age of, I want to say 13, 14, I want to say I was in 8th grade, man. I always loved singing, but there was a friend of mine in 8th grade. Her name was Amabel. And I remember singing in class during this you know, little break time that we had. And she would sit in front of me. And I don't even know if she remembers this, but I was singing some Shy, you remember Shy,
yeah, yeah.
You know, songs. And she turned around and she goes, "Was that you?" And I remember being so shy at the time. I was like, "Yeah, don't tell nobody." You know, I didn't want no one to know. And she goes, "Man, you really need to do something with music. You know, you can sing." And I remember being so shy back then. I didn't know how to take it. And I was like, you know, "You think so?" And she goes, "Man, you need to sing." And I think that was probably the first time that I ever even thought of doing something, you know, with the whole music thing and singing. Yeah. And I guess almost in a sense, she kind of pushed me into it, you know, kind of gave me that, you know, the extra, you know, I guess confirmation. Yeah. And that was it. That was it. After that, I was like, okay, I want to write. I want to sing and this and that. And got connected with some of my brother's friends that were involved in music at the time. And, you know, started recording.
Did you do any like training or vocal lessons or anything like that? Like,
you know what? I've never done that. Never.
Wow.
I've never taken any singing lessons, never taken any, you know, vocal lessons. I guess by trying to mimic all the singers and artists that I ever listened to, I mean, it's endless, man. I'm listening to Michael, from Michael to Stevie Wonder to Lionel Richie to like Brian McKnight to, you know, George Lamont, all the freestyle artists that I grew up with. I tried mimicking them, almost tried to do exactly what they would do. Mm-hmm. And that was probably my, you know, my vocal lessons, hearing them on the radio, hearing them on stereos, and that was it. But never actually taking a vocal class or nothing like that.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, most of these artists that you see nowadays, like back in the day, it was like, some of the labels would even pay for some of these guys to go and take vocal classes and kind of get involved with, keep improving. Yeah. The whole artist development factor.
Development. I was about to say that. Yeah.
So nowadays, labels don't even, like, they don't even want to work with you unless you're already a developed artist. You know,
That's so true. Yeah. That's what now, you know, nowadays it's all about, you know, build your brand first before we even start messing with you. Because, you know, I think back then it was a different time, different world, where they actually took time to develop an artist.
Yeah.
They you know, poured their heart and soul into, you know, make somebody a star.
Yeah.
Now it's like, if you don't look like a star, if you don't dress like a star, if you don't sing like a star, not doing anything. Yeah, the it factor. It's like, if you're not it, we ain't even going to mess with it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's because of how, you know, record sales have gone down. You know, I think labels don't want to even put any kind of investment into you unless you have a following now. Or, you know, if they even think you even have a chance, which is sad. But
how many followers you have?
It's all social media now.
Your downloads.
It's like if you don't have more than, you know, 500,000 followers or, you know, in your social media network, then we're not even going to mess with you, yeah. which is crazy.
Yeah.
There's so much talent out there.
Nowadays, I mean, you've been signed to some major labels. Nowadays, what do you see are the differences from major labels and independent labels and just even getting signed?
Well, I think now, you know, with majors, I mean, yeah, the one thing that is still left for the majors is that they have the machine. Yeah. They have they're basically your bank.
Yeah.
You know, they're the ones that put the money. They have the big dollars that can put the marketing dollars into a project. They have that. They've kept that.
Yeah.
But aside from that, that's really, honestly, that's all they have.
Yeah.
You know, because as an artist now who is established now, that has, you know, sold, you know, the platinum status, quote unquote, album sales.
Yeah.
Now I have a following now. You know, I have a certain brand. I can go out there and do it independently if, you know,
yeah.
since now that I'm doing it, you know, myself, I can have my own staff of people that can work, you know, the marketing, the whatever radio.
Yeah.
And, you know, now it's, I guess through this whole social media world, it's a lot easier to put your music out there and yeah. to tell people about what you're doing and you know, the work that you're creating. I guess that's the difference now. Yeah. You know, majors nowadays, you know, are more about the dollar. You yeah. know, I guess you utilize them for the money,
yeah.
so that you can put yourself out there. But man, it's just such a different world that we're yeah. living in now.
Yeah.
Where now you actually take matters into your own hands.
Yeah.
You know, you control it now.
Yeah.
You know, the difference between that is you can pretty much, you know, decide what single you want to release,
yeah.
Who you want to work with, as opposed to like, oh, so-and-so is making these hits right now, go and work with them.
Yeah.
But it's going to cost you $50,000, and you're like, well, I don't want to pay $50.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're paying everything out of pocket.
Yeah.
Well, now you can actually do what you want to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, and go with that as, yeah. as opposed to, you know, doing what these guys are asking for you to yeah. do.
And what would you say was the big break that got the some of the labels to notice you? What was your big break? What was that it moment?
I think when I was with this boy band called the Cumbia Kings, and because they knew that I had already, you know, some kind of, I guess, a fan base,
mm-hmm.
A following, being with this group. Even though we were not big on the American side, we were doing great numbers on the Latin side. They saw that mm-hmm. as a platform that they could use to say, okay, well, we could use, we could sign him, and we could say the ex member of, or the ex, yeah. you know, lead singer of, and use that as leverage to push him into the American market. And also another thing that helped me was that I was also writing and producing my own music, and they saw that as another tool.
Mm-hmm.
That he's like, well, if he's writing and producing his own music, and he's given us a great sound, mm-hmm. we can still use that as another tool for him to produce his own project, produce his own album, and, you know, deliver.
Mm-hmm.
And the song that actually got me signed to Columbia was a song called "Don't Wanna Try," which was my very, very first hit as a solo artist. And I think that helped me a lot, you know, to get signed to this label. And the fact that the person that I went to try to work to get this song at radio had the relationships at radio, had the personal relationships with them that could get the song out and, you know, to the masses, and actually get it played on pop radio and rhythmic radio and top 40 radio. So that helped me a lot.
How hard is it to get on the radio nowadays?
Oh man, I think it's probably the hardest thing now. If you ain't got the personal relationships, or yeah. let alone if you ain't got the dollars, I guess, now to
yeah.
you know, to get yourself on radio, it's not gonna happen.
Yeah. It's a challenge.
It's a very, 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 you know, crazy challenge now to get your music on the radio, because the major labels are the ones that are putting that top dollar. And mind you, now it's like maybe 20 songs that are played by the hour.
On rotation.
And that's it. And they're the ones that are paying. The people that are actually paying for these songs to be on rotation are the ones that are winning, because they have the big pockets, you know, to be able to continue with the rotation and, you know, putting the song on the radio, unless, you know, you have, again, that personal relationship with the radio station or the program director or the music director. You know, you could be doing something for them as well as them doing something for you. But that's just...
Because then after that, you know, they play your stuff.
Right.
And then you get invited to do these, like, radio promo shows.
Right,
these,
right.
These, like, huge events with all these
you
other
artists.
You have
the Wango Tangos, the Zootopias, you know, December Fests or whatever. You know,
and most
big
of that stuff,
shows.
Artists doesn't even get paid for most of those, right?
No, those are all...
free gigs.
Practically, gigs. It's more promotion because you're getting in front of the masses. Yeah. You know, obviously the fans that pay, you know, a good price for a ticket to go see, you know, 10, 12 bands or groups or, you know, artists that are there to perform. And in return, what you're getting is, you know, free spins, literally, for, you know, the work that you're doing for these stations.
And then the mentions and then the promo and
all of that stuff. Yeah. So it goes hand in hand. I mean, you know, that's how it is. That's how it's worked, you know, to get your song on the radio. You know, do something for me, I do something for you. Scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Working with some of these stations, what are the things that they expect of you, like radio drops and maybe appearances when you're in town? What does it entail working in that?
Well, obviously the radio drops for sure. They ask, you know, whenever they do have these, you know, big shows, that you would come and be a part of these shows. Obviously, you know, just commit yourself to them and, you know, do these, you know, either full band shows or either, you know, as we say, a DJ show, a track show.
Acoustic
shows. I mean, what is cool about that, though, is that, you know, because these stations are making top dollar, they'll pay. Sometimes they'll pay for your travels. Yeah. But they won't pay for, like, an entourage type of travel. Yeah. They'll only pay for the artist and probably, you know, two or three others, maybe just two other, you know, members that are with you. And that's cool. You know, they take care of your hotel. Yeah. So that way it doesn't come out of your pocket. Yeah. But obviously, if you're trying to get in good with the station, then you'll say, don't worry, I'll pay for it all. Yeah. And that's how I'll, you know, I'll get in somehow, some way. But yeah, that's how you got to do it nowadays.
Well, what about touring, like the tour life? I know, you know, you did this big tour with Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah.
and
with Enrique.
Enrique Iglesias. What is the tour life like when for an artist? I've been on some serious tours,
right?
And
you know what it's like.
Yeah, I know the craziness of it. But what is it for Frankie J? What is that tour life like?
Well, I mean, I just try to be there for the purpose of why I'm there, which is to perform, to be the best that I can be as an artist, and as a person, as an individual. You know, try to. You know, promote my music and obviously get in touch with the fans, connect with the fans on a personal level, you know, get to know, you know, the radio people, get to know everybody that really I need to get to know in order to, you know, have longevity as an artist. That's really the purpose. That's really the purpose to go out there and really just, you know, have a good time doing what I'm doing. And but, you know, now for me is not the craziness anymore. Before it was like, oh yeah, now it's all, you know, party and celebrate. Now I try to dodge as much as I can of the craziness, you know, because we know how it can get. But now it's a very different Frankie J that you see.
Yeah.
you know, we were talking about this off the radar, off the air, how, you know, yeah. I've become a person who is now a Christ follower, you yeah. know, and not being too much about, you know, being religious, but, you know, it's a huge transformation for yeah. me that, you know, I can say, you know, I think I've I control myself now because I know that it's better for me to, you know, to do good and be able to, how do I explain it, man? How do I say it? Just be a good person, man, while I'm on the road. Before it was
example,
being an example yeah. and be a leader yeah. And not get mixed in with all the craziness of the world, because I'm a family man. Yeah. I have children. And I have a wife that literally waits for me, you know, when I'm out there doing, you know, doing the shows and going on tour. But yeah, man, just, you know, I have God in my life now. Before it was the whole thing about partying it up and living it yeah. up and the whole, you know, the Hollywood life, yeah. you know, look at me, I'm an artist, I'm famous yeah. and, you know, I make my money doing this and this yeah. and that, you know, now it's a whole different, outlook in life.
What would you say have been some of the challenges in your transformation and just even the transition from saying, you know what, I came from this Hollywood life and I'm doing this stuff, but now I want to walk with God. I want to walk with Jesus. So, you know, in that transition, what has been the hardest thing that you've dealt with personally and as an artist?
Oh man, I think it's just the pressure. The temptation. We all know that when we go out into the world and we're doing these shows, the thing about the temptation is literally in your face every day. Yeah. Every day, every day. There's, you know, women out there that can practically throw themselves at you because you're on the main stage, because you are who you are. I think for me, that's been the toughest thing, to stay away from that, to turn the other cheek or turn the other way and say no. That's, I think, for me, that's been probably one of the toughest things, to stay on the safe zone, you know, and not get caught up on all of that, you know, all of those things. It's mainly the how do you say it? It's like the flesh and the Holy Spirit, man, just playing a tug of war, you know, saying no, yes, no, yes, all the time. And, you know, it's really just, you know, trying to balance all of that stuff and really just knowing, like, what is better for me? What is good for me and what is bad for me? What should I do and the do's and don'ts? You know, those are all the things that go through my mind when I'm out there, you know, performing and you know, when I'm on stage, because you see everybody, you know, they're all happy to see you. They're all excited to see you. They all want to touch you. I just try to close myself out after stage, you know, put myself in a room.
It's the three F's, the fame, the fortune, and the females that'll bring you down.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? In the industry.
Yeah. So
I can't even imagine being in your situation, you know, and still trying to stay focused.
Still trying to stay focused and trying to walk a good, you know, a good path and try to walk with the Lord at the same time. Fight the good fight. Yeah. And, you know, really just try to stay focused on what's true and what's not. Yeah. So, you know, there's so many mirages out there, man. There's so many illusions, smoke and mirrors that you come across with in this path. But, you know, again, like how we were talking off the air, we were talking about use the talent that God has given you for good and to go and, you know, spread the word, man. Spread his word and tell people that God is real, that Christ died for us. And in a sense, we're doing what he gave us in this world to be able to do, and the talent that he gave us, but, you know, use it for the greater good, you know?
So how has the industry treated you since?
Oh, man.
Since you've claimed your new faith?
I've gotten some doors closed. I've gotten some doors closed and some people that have turned away from me because, you know, I am who I am now, and I've accepted Christ in my life. I've seen it. I've seen where people have just said, "Hey, man, I can't work with you anymore. I'm done with you."
Wow.
And it's I guess I should say it's not as shocking as I would think. You know, it would be because I kind of know, you know, where I'm going, and you know, just as Christ was mocked when he was here on earth, and how he was rejected by his own people, I expect that. Yeah. I expect to be, you know, also, you know, ridiculed or treated a certain way just because, you know, I am a converted, you know, Christian man. Yeah. Those are the obstacles that I've gone through where, you know, I've seen people just totally reject you. You know?
And are you being told in the industry you can't say certain things on stage?
Absolutely.
You can't sing certain things or put certain things in
your absolutely. Songs? I mean, you know, I've been told, you know, what to say, what not to say, what to do, what not to do. But, you know, I can't, you know, there's only one God that I can answer to, and that's him. You know, that's God, man. That's... And you know, if I go ahead and listen to them, then I would be almost saying I'm denying what he wants me to do now that I've actually found my purpose. Yeah. So I feel like it's my job, it's my duty to, you know, to follow his instructions and not man's instructions, because you can't trust man, you know, because man is, you know, is so uneven, so unbalanced. So, you know, whenever I am out on the road, I feel like I have to, you know, abide by the rules and follow him. I mean, I ain't gonna lie, man, it's been tough. It's been very tough. I mean, I'm not a perfect man. I'm not by no means trying to say that I'm perfect. But I do know that, you know, we do have to abide, you know, and do what's right, not follow the craziness of the world.
Oh yeah. And so and knowing that you take that stance, when you're out in public,
yeah,
do you think that there's certain things that people expect of you or not expect of you, like when you're maybe out with the homies or whatever, and being the person that you were, transitioning back into who you are now?
Well, for a time I did struggle with that, because I did, you know, get back into business with, you know, certain people that I was not in business with for a while. We had a falling out, and I decided to try it again to get back into business with them because I knew how well connected they were in the industry. But my thing with going back into business with them was telling them, "Hey guys, I'm not the same person that I was before, but I'm willing to try this out because I know that we can win." You know, in my mind, I'm thinking we can win if we do this right and we rekindle our relationship and go back at this, you know, at this business again and you know, try to win. But I did tell them off the top, I am not the person that I used to be. And with that being said, I think they kind of knew where I was going. But they were like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. You know, let's just go do this. Let's get this money. Yeah. So I was like, all right, let's go, let's try it. And sure enough, in the midst of it, they wanted me to go out and party. They wanted me to go to the clubs. They wanted me to go get drunk. They wanted me to go out with the women. They wanted me to basically do all the things that I told them that I am not doing anymore. And they would mock me. They would make fun of me. They would literally say, like, "Hey, don't worry, bro. No one's going to know."
Yeah.
That's what they would say literally in your ear, you know? Yeah. And you know, that's what they would do. And I would literally go to the club for 30, 45 minutes, maybe an hour if I was trying to be cool and nice about it, and then I'd leave. And they'd you know, try to look for me, and the next day, like, "Hey man, where'd you go? What'd you do? You know, how come we didn't see you the rest of the night?" And I would just say, like, "Hey man, you know, I'm done. You know, I told you guys, this is not what I'm here to do. I'm here to just stay focused on what I'm doing with the music, and that's it." And they never got the point. They never got it. I, you know, probably it lasted another year, year and a half, and then we just fell off. And now I'm independent. Now I'm doing my own thing.
Your own thing. You know? Yeah, well, like we were talking earlier, I'd mentioned that Sonny from POD, he brings his kids on tour. Like him and his son are like roll dogs. You know what I'm saying?
Which is amazing. Yeah. Which is amazing.
Is that something you would ever consider
doing? I would love to. Oh, yeah. I mean, at one point I wanted to bring my wife and my kids, and, you know, they were not having it. They were not having it. They were like, no, we can't do it. If you do that, we're done, blah, blah, blah. So I struggled with that, and I went and did it. Obviously, it didn't, you know, the whole thing collapsed. Mm-hmm. But I still continued doing what I was doing and, you know, stuck to my guns. Now, now that I'm away from that, every now and then I bring my son on the road, or, you know, my wife comes with me, and while the kids are home or either with grandparents, and, you know, try to balance that out. Whenever it is possible that they can travel with me, they will. And now I'm just, you know, I'm cool. I'm cool now because, you know, I try to stay away from all the craziness now, you know, being the fact that, you know, now my wife can travel with me and my kids can travel with me. I think I took my son to San Antonio already. I took him to Phoenix. I've taken him to L.A., even Vegas, where we're doing like an In-N-Out thing, and then that's it, you know, and we come back home. So it feels good. Cool, yeah, it feels good because, you know, like we were talking earlier, too, it's like the Holy Spirit just literally in the flesh, protecting you, guarding you,
sitting there with
from,
the,
you know, all conviction. The stuff. Yeah, exactly.
And
so
it's funny the way it all kind of, you know, it's full circle. Yeah. You know, on how stuff works. Like before, it's like, no, you know, you wouldn't even think of having kids. Now you've got kids. And it's like, now, you know, you want to bring them out on the road with you. Would you ever consider them getting involved in the industry?
Well, my daughter is.
I've heard your daughter sing.
Yeah, man, my daughter is
for the mayor of Chula Vista.
For the mayor, that's right.
I was there for that.
They emailed me about you know, having my daughter do the national anthem for Maria Salas, and I said, yeah, absolutely, because the way they saw her, the way they found out about her was through some mutual friends. Amy, this lady that right now works at the East Lake Ballpark, the baseball for the, oh my gosh, what is it, the Little League, the League of, I think it's Special Needs League, for the kids that have special needs. They created this league for them, and Amy and Chris, her husband, are the head, I guess the head people in charge of that league, and they requested my daughter to do the national anthem. So she went and did it. The mayor was there. She saw her, and that's when she came up to me and she goes, hey, we would love to have her, you know, for our event. And I said, absolutely. So she's definitely, you know, getting her feet wet in the industry. And one thing that I do tell my son and her, that if they do want to get involved, that they need to have their feet well planted on the ground, and they need to have God in their life, because the industry is not easy. It's not easy. It'll eat you up, you know, if you're not grounded. But yeah, I'm trying to guide them, you know, because my son wants to do music now. Mm-hmm. You know, before
producer,
he was
singer,
you know, into the production, and he has a good voice, actually, man. He can actually sing, but for a while I would take him on stage, and then all of a sudden as he got older, when he turned 11, he was like, no, I don't want to do it anymore, Dad. I'm you know, and I'm like, why? You know, I don't know if his friends made fun of him or something happened where it discouraged him, but he doesn't want to do the singing no more, but he wants to get involved, you know, in the production side. So, you know, I'm trying to coach them through it, guide them through it. So, you know, anything that they want to do, I'm not against. As long as it's good, as long as it's something that is going to be good for them and for their life, you know, I'm not against that. So, yeah, I mean, why not? Why not have them involved?
But seeing the madness and knowing the madness of the industry, Is it something you're hesitant to, like, you know, or hey man, as long as I'm with you on the road and I'm doing all this stuff.
As long as I'm with you watching over you.
Yeah.
I mean, I like I said, I try to, you know, kind of prepare them, you know, for what, you know, for the whole, you know, for what they want to do is, you know, in the music industry, I am like, I know, you know, so I try to guide them and give them the do's and don'ts and talk to them about, you know, how crazy it can get, mm-hmm. how it can be. Not to scare them, but I do tell them, like, you know, so if you guys want to do this, this is something that they have to know, and they have to surround themselves with good people. Thank God that I've gone through what I've gone through, so I'm able to instill that in them and say, hey, man, look, you know, you guys need to just work with good people, people who are, you know, like-minded people, like themselves, who are striving for a goal. You know, and you know, staying positive, and first and foremost, man, I having God in their lives, because I dealt with people that did not have God in their life, and I myself, you know, had a certain respect for God, but did not have that personal relationship.
You knew about him, you just didn't know him.
Yeah, I just didn't know him, and I just, you know, I felt like I don't know, maybe I had to go through it in order for me to understand it, to learn about it, to tell my kids about it later on in life.
Yeah.
So that's what I tell them. I go, you know, just surround yourself with good people, like-minded people, people who have God in their lives, so that you're going to go through struggles, but hopefully not as crazy as the struggles that I went through, so that you guys can have a better, you know, lenient road ahead of you.
Are they playing any instruments or anything, or...?
My daughter wants to learn, right now they're not, my daughter wants to learn guitar. My son wants to just learn production, whether it's probably playing piano or, you know, learning how to do the sequencing programs and stuff like that. That's what he wants to do. But my daughter wants to learn how to play guitar.
And you play some piano, right?
I play piano. I'm starting to learn how to play guitar, but, mostly it's more, piano.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, what would you say have been some of the major differences that are, you know, solo artists versus being in a band or in a group?
Well, as a group, I think you don't feel so alone in the business. I think when I was in the group, I really didn't do the business. I was more like just a band member or a lead singer. And really didn't do too much on the business side, because AB and Cruz were the business men in the group. They were the ones talking to the promoters, talking to the radio. So for me, it was more like a cool, easy, you know, go in the studio, record this. Or can you go in and try to write some songs for, you know, for the project? And it was more easier, you know, to deal with. As a solo artist,
I was doing it all.
I was getting my hands dirty. I was getting upset because, you know, radio guy was not playing my song, or I was getting, you know, just I was involved more in hands-on with everything, from the image to the artwork to the cover of my album to the traveling to booking a flight, booking a hotel, booking a rental car, or all of that, man. I was literally involved in everything, you know, the production, the songwriting. So there was so much more to deal with and a lot more worries more than anything else.
What would you say it's like 80% business and 20% music, like creativity?
Yeah, well, I think it's 50-50. I mean, I wouldn't say it's, you know, that, because you have to put, you know, all your energy into creating. I mean, one cannot have, you know, a career without having, as an artist, one cannot have a career if you don't have a hit. You know, if you don't have a hit on your hands. So that's a handful of work in itself.
What comes after the hit is a lot more work. Because if you don't know the business side of it,
well, yeah, that's where the other half comes in, where you have to know the industry, you have to know the business, If you don't know the business, then you're lost.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's a balance between the artistry and the business tree of it, you know? Mm-hmm. So you have to be smart in both. Yeah. So yeah, that's where you have to have a staff of people that can also help giving you more of the knowledge, mm-hmm. you know, of you know, how to go about, how to deal with a radio station, how to deal with, you know, the promoters that are promoting your concerts, how to deal with even merchandise where you can actually make money on your brand, on your name, not just on your songwriting or production or your singing, but also on, you know, your merchandise and how you can, you know, make another business out of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's so much more, you know, that you can do.
Outside of selling records, how do artists make money these days? I mean, you know, placements and all these other
licensing. Yeah, well, I mean, you can, you know, license your songs on the publishing side. You know, you can do, you know, films. You can do commercials. You know, stuff on the radio where, you know, I mean, I see a lot of commercials nowadays where, you know, they'll use the, you know, the Eye of the Tiger song on it could be like on a car or a truck commercial, where you can license, you know, your music, you know, on these spots on television. You know, again, your merch is another way where you can make money on the side. I mean, I guess there's so many endless, you know, possibilities.
Special guest appearances.
There you go. Special guest appearances on, you know, I don't know. It could be on a TV show or it could be on a movie or, I don't know, anywhere else where there's a, you know, a gateway to try to make a business out of it.
Sweet
16s. Well, that I've done many of those.
We were just talking about
Yeah, you could do all that, man. Yeah. I mean, there's so many great things that you can do aside, you know, from, you know, the selling of the records and stuff like that.
And acting, you did a little acting.
I did some acting, man. I don't know if I was good at it, but I tried.
But
I tried my best. I did it. Yeah.
I did a check off the list.
Yeah, that's it. That's off the bucket list right there. I did a show called RPM Miami in Miami with Mundo Telemundo, and it was just one series. I acted as Ramon. I was this mechanic. I own my own shop, and it was a Spanglish TV show that was a really good show, man. I think it could have continued, you know, second series, but something happened where, you know, the channel transitioned into something else, and they didn't want to continue on to doing the next series. But definitely got my feet wet on the acting side. I got the acting bug, and I love doing it, man. It was fun. I love doing the whole dialogue thing, remembering, you know, the dialogue and reading off the scripts, and, you know, just acting was cool for me, man.
Is it a difficult transition from being on stage performing to being in front of the camera having to,
you know what it is? It is, because you could be on stage all day, you could, you know, shoot music videos all day, but another thing is to actually act as another person who you are not. You know, you're totally, you know, in a role that, you know, you're trying to get familiar with the acting role that you're doing. For me as a mechanic, I don't know nothing about being a mechanic, but I had to pretend like I knew what I was doing. I was in the car trying to, you know, change some bolts or change a filter or whatever. And it was cool, but yeah, there are challenges to all that stuff, because you have to be on point with the lines that you're having to memorize and the delivery of the role that you're playing.
Yeah. Did you take any acting classes? Any acting lessons?
Never, man. I've never taken any acting lessons. Just jumped into it. You're like, all right, bro, you're an artist. Go do your thing.
You know what to do.
It was more like, you know, just. It wasn't really a heavy role to play or a difficult role to play. Jesse Torero was the guy that actually got me the gig and to be involved in this mini series. he just required of me to get angry. That's all he said on the during the audition. He goes, "Can you be mad? Can you be angry?" And I said, "Yeah, I can." So I pulled out the Latino roots in me and just acted like I was mad and pissed off about something. And he goes, "All right, you got the role." That was it. And I was like, cool, all right. Next thing you know, I'm in Miami living there for 7 weeks.
Wow.
And living in an apartment, having my own car just to drive around the city. And let me tell you, man, I had a really cool experience, you know, doing that. It was kind of tough, though, because there was one scene that I did not like. It was a love scene that I needed to do. And it was just like, and mind you, I'm already doing this role and you know, there's a girl that I have to, you know, kiss. And it was crazy because my wife was like, "You're going to do this. You cannot do this." And I was like, "But I have to." I mean, this is, I was trying to figure out how to go about it so that it would not look so crazy. It didn't work. It just didn't work, man. I was trying to figure out how to stray from it. But the producer and the director was like, "Frankie, you got to do this." So my hands were tied. But honestly, if I was to go back into the acting thing, I would probably stray from those kinds of scenes because I have kids watching this, you know, watching the, you know, the things that I'm doing. So I want to make sure that I, you know, do something that is not going to be so uncomfortable and, you know, for them to watch. "Oh, daddy's kissing another girl, you know, but what about mommy over here watching this?" And thankfully, you know, my wife never saw the scene. She just declined from it, and my kids never saw it either, so it was a good thing.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
it there's Alec, what's his name, Andy Garcia.
I think
he actually has it in his contract where he's like, "I won't do any sex scenes, I won't do any love scenes like that."
So there's
some people that still have some
morals. Absolutely. Now I'm learning, you know. You know how they say knowing is half the battle, G.I. Joe.
So you're gonna do any more acting?
I want to. I've actually had a couple of auditions for a couple of other films that are in the making, but none of them have called me back, man. Yeah. But I definitely want to, man. I loved it. I would love to do some Christian films. You know, where
it's needed.
It could be something cool where you know, like we were talking about earlier, off the air, where it could be a cool story about a musician or a singer that transitioned, converted into the Christian, you know, faith. But this is where he was at before, and this is what really happened, you know, and how it all kind of went down with him and the journey that he had to take in order for him to get to where he wants, you know, to get to where he needed to be, you know, where God's purpose was for him. So I want to do something like that.
Yeah, no, that's needed.
That could be cool.
It's needed.
And I don't think I've seen any films about that. I mean, I've seen some musician films, you know, some artist films or whatever in the Christian side, but never in this, you know, this direction. So
yeah, I think it's needed, man. I think you need to do that.
It would be cool.
Be on the forefront of that and give some more exposure to some Latino talent that's out there. Do you feel that there's a underrepresentation in Hollywood of Latinos?
I think so, man, because a lot of films, you know, they portray us as like, "Oh, está el jardinero, the gardener, or the, you know, the cholo, or the gangster, or the drug dealer, or the, you know, whatever you want, you know," but they never really portray us as the successful Mexicano. It's very hard to find films that portray that, you know. So I think I mean, it is what it is. I guess Hollywood will have their own ways of portraying whoever they want, but I think we need to see more films where there's the successful Latino, the successful you know, attorney Latino, doctor Latino, or who, you know, whatever position, you know, as long as they portray us as, you know, successful men and women in, you know, in these films.
Yeah, I agree. And speaking of being successful Latinos, there's been, you know, being from San Diego, there's several other people just from right here in pretty much South San Diego that have been pretty successful.
Right.
What's your take on all that? I mean, we got the guys from POD, you got Mario Lopez, you got you know, you, Rey Mysterio, all these people that are
everyone that's
all right here in South San Diego, man. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's great, man. I think it's awesome that you know, we're showing that anything is possible.
Yeah.
If you really truly believe that you can do it, you're going to do it. Through the grace of God, you know, you're going to be successful, you're going to fulfill your dream, you know. Because think about it, we all probably had to go through our own obstacles, our challenges, our you know, our adversities that we had to go through in order for us to get to where we you know, where we needed to be, where we wanted to be. It just shows that there's a lot of talent here in the South Bay Area. And you know, again, just teaching the younger generation, the kids who have this goal, this dream, this aspiration of being, whether musician, whether it's a actor or a doctor or architect or whatever, engineer. It's like, you can do it. You can be successful if you truly, truly believe.
There's hope.
There's hope. Surround, again, surround yourself with good people.
People who how important will help. Is it to have a staff, to have the crew around you be like-minded? How important is that to you now?
Well, look, man, Jesus had 12 disciples. And he needed all those disciples, you know, to be able to spread his word. You know, I think God could have done it himself just on his own without the help of the disciples. But you know what? He sent his son to get a group of people, his staff that he needed in order for that, you know, that message to be sent throughout the world. Because after Jesus went back up to the Father, what did he do with the disciples? He had his disciples go and spread the word and write this book called the Bible, you know, basic instructions before leaving Earth, you know, to go and spread his word. So that's that example, you know. So we all need a staff of people to help us get to where we need to be, so that, you know, because there are certain things that I might not be able to do. That the next person might be like, hey, man, I'm smart enough to do this on this end. Well, go ahead and go do that. Well, you know, I need, you know, help on, you know, it could be social media, or it could be on merch, or it could be on the business side of, you know, just picking up the phone and calling, making simple calls. I think it's very important, you know, to have that staff around you so that it makes it a lot funner through the journey, and maybe a lot smoother, so that whenever you go through these bumps, you just get over them. You know,
what has been the best piece of advice that you've received from someone in the industry?
Just be different, be unique. Don't copy the you know, don't go with the wave. If someone goes right, you go left. If someone goes left, you go right. Just be different. I mean, that's, somebody said that to me a long time ago, and man, it's worked. It's as simple as just being who you are and not copying what someone else is doing. Because, you know, it's like that saying, it's like, do you want to be a big fish in a pond, or in a small pond, or do you want to be a fish in a small fish in a big pond. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it's true. It's like, you just want to be unique. You want to do, you know, the just, you know, be different, you know?
And, you know, the average song is 3.5-4 minutes.
Right.
And let's say you have 4 minutes to give the world a message. What message would you give?
Oh, man. I think it'd be a message of love. Just, you know, loving one another through the good and the bad. And just giving each other hope, you know, telling everybody that you know, that love is the answer, man, to push each other in the right direction. I think that would be the message that I would probably tell, you know, tell the world, if it would be the last song that I could actually do, you know.
So do you feel that that singing is your calling?
Absolutely, I think it is. I think it is, because I think through the singing and the music, that is my strength. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the gift that God has given me, and that's the gift that I now am using to pretty much, you know, expand or grow his, you know, in his kingdom, you know, spread the word. That's probably the best thing that I can do to...
That's your tool.
To utilize it, to tell people about Christ and his love for us and how he's, you know, forgiven us for our sins. Yeah. And man, I think that's the strongest thing that I have.
Yeah, because you have a song, Daddy's Little Girl.
Daddy's Little Girl.
And that one has been one for me that I, you know, I got two daughters. You know, just listening to that song, it's like, oof, you know, it kind of tugs at the heartstrings.
Hits home.
Yeah. You think, is that something after you had your daughter that you were like, oh, you know, I want to hit more, you know, with, you know, father-daughter thing or?
Yeah. You know, I wrote that song with a popular songwriter. His name is Claude Kelly. Claude Kelly went on to write for Kelly Clarkson, went on to write for Miley Cyrus. Believe it or not, that was his very, very first song that ever went to pop stream. Him and I wrote it together. It was my concept. It was a song that I wanted to write. And it hit home to me because I was going through that at that time. Yeah. I was going through that, and I noticed that it was a very tough time in my life where I was going through the whole, you know, divorce, rekindling my relationship with my wife. Mm-hmm. And so... I don't know. It was never really one of those popular singles for me, but it became popular on the internet.
Yeah, and amongst the fans.
And amongst the fans. Yeah, it was never really one of those radio hits, but it was amongst the fans. It was a hit. It was a big hit because even when I go to do a show and sometimes I don't do the song, they'll request it.
They're yelling out
for Daddy's Little Girl. Yeah. And so I'm like, but why? You know, they're like, no matter, you know, even though I think it's like a sad song, people still want to hear it.
Yeah.
They can care less. They're like, do it. Go ahead, do it. So sometimes I do it, even when they, you know, even though sometimes it's not on the actual set list, I'll still do it, if the fans call it. Yeah, the encore.
Yeah. And there's another song, How to Deal.
Right.
Do you feel that was a song that was kind of more like a life story?
Definitely a life story.
Tell me about that.
Definitely a life story. How to deal, man. I wrote this song with Brian Michael Cox. Now, Brian Michael Cox did, along with Jermaine Dupri, probably some of the biggest R&B songs, from Jagged Edge to Usher. They did Burn for Usher. They did You Got It Bad. They did a lot of stuff together with Jagged Edge. They did Gotta Be. Man, the list goes on and on. But I wrote this song with Brian because at that time it was during that moment where I was going through it. Yeah. I was going through it, man. And this was during the peak and highlight of my career where I felt like I was, you know, losing the most important thing in my life.
Yeah.
You know, going through the doubtings and, you know, like I'm over here thinking that I'm this on top of the world, on my high horse. But yet the most important thing in my life is, you know, my family.
Yeah.
But I'm over here saying like I gotta cope with it. I gotta deal with it no matter what happens. I gotta, you know, pursue my career and I gotta go ahead and you know, do what I gotta do.
Yeah.
But yet in my mind I'm thinking, damn, I'm losing the one that I love. Mm-hmm. You know, so it was a very very important part of my life where it was the balancing or the transitioning into like, okay, you know, am I gonna do this or am I gonna, you know, and lose it all, or am I going to continue doing what I'm doing, but still keep, you know, that love of my life. You know, so it was
your,
tough,
your
man.
First love,
right.
So, going through what you went through, I mean, you went platinum, you sold a million records, and then that was kind of in the middle of your career because you didn't start off as a platinum selling artist, right?
Right.
How difficult was that climb for you?
From going, well, you know, before the whole solo project, we were selling, I mean, our first album with the Cumbia Kings sold platinum. Mm-hmm. The second one went platinum. I didn't know what was going to happen. Yeah. I was scared out of my mind. Yeah. I'm thinking, well, I'm already coming in from a successful group. Yeah. I mean, I'm coming out of a successful group into doing the solo thing. I'm thinking, what's going to happen? Like, I'm nervous. Yeah. Am I going to be successful or am I not?
It's got to be a scary thing.
It was the
branching
scariest.
Branching off into your own, yeah.
Yeah, I knew that I had something good. I felt good about it, but did not know how well the people were going to take it, because mind you, I came from a Cumbia King group, which was nothing but cumbias. Yeah, we did a little bit of English, but we didn't really have a hit in the English side. So I said, you know what? Well, whatever happens, happens. I'm just going to go and try it out. But I was scared. And the first time that I heard the song on the radio, Don't Want to Try, which was the very first single that I had, it was at around midnight. It was on my birthday. I remember it because it was my birthday, and a station called Z95 in Corpus Christi played it, and it was the slow jams hour. And when I first heard it on the radio, I was like, oh wow. I remember saying, this sounds like a hit. Now, is it gonna sell? I don't know. But it sounds like a hit. And so yeah, it was hard, man. It was hard because I didn't know what was gonna happen. Thank God, obviously, from there was the time that I even switched name. I even changed names because my whole name, my whole thing with Cumbia Kings was Cisco. Mm-hmm. Here I am changing my name, and I'm changing the music that I'm singing. What are the chances? What are the odds that I will probably be a platinum recording artist? I don't know. But I just remember that I just believed. Yeah. I believed, and I was like, "Oh, this is something that sounds cool. I think it's gonna happen."
Yeah, actually, I think the very first time I met you, I think you were going by Frankie Bautista at the time.
Bautista, yeah.
And it was I'd met you at Shiesty's house. I don't know if you remember You remember Shiesty?
Yeah, of course, Jesse.
And he was doing something with you, and you were at his house. And,
I was recording some demos.
Yeah, you're doing something, and I came in and. I was like, yeah, dude, I'd heard of you. I didn't know you were from Dago at that time. Uh-huh. But I'd known you from Cumbia Kings.
Cumbia Kings.
And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, right. You know, I remember you just met you briefly. Cool. And I think you're picking something out or doing something. And we're both kind of on our way out. But, you know, I'd met you then. And then he had told me that I think you were just getting ready to release some solo stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was back in the day.
That was 2003, I want to say.
Something like that, yeah.
Because that's when I left the group. That's when I left Cumbia Kings. And I had already had the songs. Because I remember having written some of those songs. Even when I was with the group, I was learning the whole sequencing programs. I was learning how to produce, how to record, all the stuff, the studio stuff. And I remember being excited because I had gotten... Through being in the group out there in Texas, and I was coming back and forth to California, visiting my family, and then going back. And the times that I would come here to visit my family, I would also take some time off to go and record my own songs with a very good friend of mine named James Galvez, whom now we are working after so long. We got back together, and now we're working on this new project, the independent project, and you know, with the freestyle stuff that I'm doing. But he was the guy that helped me on the production side to put my first album together with Columbia as Frankie J. And I was recording, you know, songs with him, and that's when I recorded. Believe it or not, at his house, I wrote the chorus to Sugar Sugar in Chula Vista. In Chula Vista, it was his parents' house. And well, that's where Sugar Sugar kind of also started. Bash came over and we're writing the song together. In that same closet, I recorded Don't Want to Try. I did it first there, and then Sugar came
closet.
Afterwards. Yeah, in the closet and that. Where there's clothes and everything. Yeah. I was like, yeah, it was at his house in Chula Vista J Street.
Tell me about your collaboration with Baby Bash.
With Bash, I met Bash when I was in with the Cumbia Kings. Mm-hmm. One of the other lead singers, DJ Kane, had a personal relationship with him. And Happy Perez, who later became pretty much the producer of all the hits. Yeah. We would do shows together with Cumbia Kings and, you know, South Park Mexican, Baby Bash. Back then it was Baby Beesh. You know, DJ Kane did something with Bash at the time. And then Bash had, you know, asked him, hey, man, I would love to meet, you know, Cisco. You know, I know he does a lot more of the R&B stuff. I would love for him to, you know, to do some stuff over here with us. And so we got introduced by DJ Kane. And so then after that, we just, you know, build a relationship, cool friendship. And, you know, I came to San Diego. I invited him over to San Diego because he was doing something out in L.A. or in Fresno. I think it was Fresno. Mm-hmm. And he drove all the way down. And we wrote Sugar Sugar together.
Nice.
And in the same place where I recorded, Don't Want to Try. Yeah. So the rest is history.
And that was something that he put out on his
album. Was something that he put out on his on his project, he got signed to Universal with that song. The crazy thing about Sugar Sugar was that song was supposed to be my second single to Columbia Columbia Records, but Columbia denied that song. Wow. They said, that song does not sound cool. It doesn't sound good. It doesn't make you shine. You know, your vocals are just mediocre. And I remember at the time, my management was like, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to give that song? Do you want to buy it from Bash? Because I remember Bash was trying to sell it to me for $25,000. And I was willing to pay for it. Because at that time, I was making, you know, from that money that I had received, you know, from the budget, I was going to grab that money and give it to him. But then I told my manager, I said, nah. Give that song to him, let him get signed with that song, and we'll both go on tour together. Yeah. That way we have, you know, something, you know, together, and we could go on tour and do a House of Blues tour or whatever.
Yeah.
So he said, all right. And he went to, I think it was Avery Lipman at the time, who was the president at Universal, and showed him the record. He fell in love with it, and he goes, let's put it out as a single. That ended up being Bash's biggest record.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
And now there's a remix to it.
Now there's a remix to it, done by, the guy who sings it is Francesco Yates. Mm. And the DJ that is, I guess it's his single, is, what's his name?
But it's still your.
But it's still my hook.
Yeah,
it's still my chorus, vocals, still my lyric and everything. Yeah. On the song, not my vocal, it's Francesco Yates' vocal now, but he literally kept the same lyrics that I wrote on the song, and just, you know, recreated it with the sample that Happy
did.
Well, they went in, they had to ask us, they literally had to ask us for permission. It was obviously Bash, myself, and Happy who did the song, so they had to ask us for permission for them to be able to use the sample, and we said yes, and man, they just made it a hit again. So
that's cool.
Good stuff, man.
Yeah, I was listening to that not too long ago, and it came on, and I was like tripping, and I was telling my daughters. my daughters had met you briefly at the Love Thy Neighbor toy drive.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so they were like, "Wow, who? What? You know,
who sings that?
Yeah,
who
I was
sings
like,
what?
Okay, this guy you met over here—that's originally his song.
That's yeah.
You know, and I was trying to explain that to them.
They're like, "What's a remake, Dad?
Yeah. They had a hard time grasping that one. But
Robin Schultz, that's the guy who did it.
Robin Schultz.
He's from Germany.
Oh, nice.
And we have info from out there that Sugar Sugar was a huge record in Germany.
Nice.
It was the number one record out there when we put it out. Mm-hmm. And it was like a number one record in France. It was like... out there now it's USSR, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which
yeah.
is Russia and Soviet Union. Yeah. It was number one out there. It was number one mostly in all the European countries and not in the United States. It was a number two record in the United States.
Wow. And so you actually crazy. You actually had a number three hit.
It was a number three on the Billboard, the album. When the album went platinum, it was the number three album. It was the most sold album in the United States.
Nice.
The one. The album, The One.
And that's the one that went platinum. And
the one that had Sugar Sugar on it, the one that had Don't Want to Try on it. Well, originally, the first album that was that went gold was an album called What's a Man to Do, which was the single of Don't Want to Try, which was the first single that I ever released as a solo artist. And then that was in 2003. And in 2005 was The One, which had Obsession featuring Bash. And then we had How to Deal. And then I had the remake of More Than Words, which was the icing on the cake to that album, because that was the song that catapulted the album sales to go platinum on the album The One. So that's when they added, Columbia had this idea of re-adding the hits, which was Sugar Sugar and Don't Want to Try, to the second album.
Was that the album that got the Grammy nomination?
The Grammy nomination was the last album with, actually the first and only album with Universal nice. Latin. So I was already out of the Columbia Sony label.
Oh.
This was like 4 years after, and then got signed to Universal on the major side. And the album Faith, Hope, and Amor was the one that got nominated for the American Grammy.
Oh yeah, yeah.
In 2014.
And you'd already been saved.
I'd already been saved, yes.
So how did people take that?
Well, at the time, Universal was not having, they were not having it. They were not having it. They were just not, you know, because I was posting a lot of stuff on my social media about, you know, scripture and, you know, stuff like that. And they were just like, social media is not for you to post scripture. It's for you to post, you know, promote your album, promote your music, promote your image and all that stuff. Why are you promoting, you know, Christianity? And it was pretty strong, man. It was pretty strong. They were not having me. I mean, I even had a meeting with the general manager and the A&Rs.
Wow.
And they were saying, like, you cannot post this stuff. Post promoting just your music. Don't let people, you know, you don't have to promote your religion. And I'm just, it was just hard. It was tough.
Did they end up creating other social media for you to where?
No.
It's your personal and your business?
No. They got so upset that they just said, all right, do what you got to do. And then pretty soon they let go of my project.
Wow.
So then I had to literally go out there and request to leave the label so that I can get out myself and be able to do my own independent stuff and be who I wanted.
Did they let you out like that? Or?
They let me out, but with
litigation or anything?
I didn't have to pay them anything. It was just more like giving them I think it was four songs that I had to give them in order for me to get out so that they can still continue using material of mine, you know, for their, stuff.
Yeah, I got four songs right here. Take these.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that was it. And so it was a blessing for me, man. I needed to get out of there anyway.
And there's always, and no matter what industry you're in, there's always ups and downs,
right?
Some dark moments and all these things in different industries. But what would you say has been some ups and downs for yours, and maybe some dark moments that people didn't realize that now you can talk about, maybe like leaving Cumbia Kings and, you know, that kind of stuff? Or, you know, was there any other stuff that
there was definitely a very dark moment in my career. And I'm embarrassed to say, because, you know, it was a moment in my life where, again, I was in my high horse and I was, you know, pretty much neglecting my family, neglecting truly, like, you know, pretty much my marriage. You know, I was neglecting it, and I was caught. In Miami. With a woman that was pretty much very much in the public eye. I won't mention her name, but it was all over the news. It was all over the Spanish network. I mean, you name it, Gordo y la Flaca, you name it, from Despierta America to, you know, all the major farándula shows that you can actually think of. And it was all over US Weekly. It was all over People Magazine. It was all over I mean, the list goes on, and I couldn't go anywhere, man. I couldn't go anywhere. I remember my management telling me, hey, man, get yourself a hotel room. Stay in there for a couple of weeks. Don't come out. Don't even go home. It was to the point where my wife found out. It was all over the news. She was watching it. My in-laws were watching it. It was a very, very dark moment for me where I said, you know what? This is it. I'm done. You know, here there's people seeing me. Fans are seeing me. You know, he's a, you know, a piece of you know what, and I'm totally just neglecting everything that truly was real to me, you know, because I thought I was this, you know, artist that was on their peak, and that was a very tough moment for me. But luckily, I was able to get over that hump, and continue, you know, like I said, save my marriage, and. It was just a very, very crazy time in my career where I felt like everybody had turned their back on me. Because, you know, the media makes you look so bad.
Oh, yeah.
They feed off of the negativity. Anytime that they see somebody on their way down, they want to see you fall. Yeah. And they want to see you really hit the bottom. So they were, making things up on the news when they really had no idea what was going on. And so, you know, obviously made my wife think so many crazy things, made my in-laws think so many crazy things. And it was just very hard. It was a very hard moment. It was 2005. Mm-hmm. It was in 2005. But luckily, man, God was able to intervene and save my marriage, save my family. That's why you hear those songs. That's why you were hearing those songs, man, during that at that time. Yeah. Where it was talking about reality and what I was really going through. As a matter of fact, I even put out an album called A New Day, Un Nuevo Día, which was really talking about me personally, my life, where I was able to rekindle my relationship with my wife, my marriage, save my marriage. It was a new day for me. I was like, you know what, this has to change. And it was slowly a transition. It was a transition that took a little bit of time. But yeah, man, it was a very tough time for me, and business-wise, it was hard. And I even let go of my management during that time because I was just done. I even felt they were even involved with putting this together for me.
Wow.
So, yeah, man, it was crazy.
Tough. What would you say right now to anybody that's going through something like that? Any words of wisdom? Any scripture? Anything that you
can
go
to the
share?
Source. I would just tell them, go to the source, and the source is God, because he's the one that's going to help you through everything. He's the one that has all the answers. Really build a relationship with him. Ask him, pray to him, get on your knees and ask for forgiveness, because that's ultimately what's going to allow you to move on with your life and what's going to just allow you to move forward. I mean, that's what I did, man. Yeah. I went on my knees and I literally cried my eyes out and asked for forgiveness, because I knew that that's what I needed to do. That was that moment in time where I said, God, if you're real, take this burden away from me. Take it away, because I'm human. I don't know how to handle this.
Yeah.
You know, I want my life back. I want, you know, I neglected you. I turned my back on you. And I literally, in the Bible says not to use your money as your shield, as your guard, right? It says don't use that, because that's going to end. That's all that stuff is going to go away. And that's what I was doing. I was utilizing that as my shield, as my guard, as like, nothing's going to happen to me. I can take care of anything, you know, and I can buy my freedom. I can buy, you know, my way out of anything. But I was so wrong. He took everything away. He took everything away. And you know, that's when I said, you know what? I'm done. I said, I'm sorry. You are my Lord and Savior. You are my God. You created me. You can take all this away. You can cure me. You can, you know, literally just make me new again. And I think after I did that, slowly but surely, man, he started giving everything away. I mean, he started giving it back to me.
Yeah.
Slowly but surely. It was a process again. Yeah. You know, he didn't give everything away. He didn't give it to me right then and there like that.
Can't be easy. It can't be easy.
Yeah.
And I notice now that you're getting a lot more involved in community efforts as well. So tell me about that. I know you recently did that thing with The Rock back in December. I guess they invited you to come out and sing.
Yes.
Out to that. And then you came out to My Toy Drive as well.
Yes.
Tell me about some of the community stuff.
Well, I've been able to get involved with, a few things here and there here in San Diego. And I think it's very important that we get involved as people who are in the public eye, because, again, you want to give those people an example. And not just, say, like, oh, look, we're doing what we love to do and we're making a great living out of it and we're keeping everything to ourselves. You know, and the Bible also tells us to give, I'd rather give than receive. Mm-hmm. So, for me to give back to my community and be able to do that, it feels good, man. I mean, again, not because you do good works, you're going to go to heaven. The Bible doesn't tell us that. Yeah. The Bible tells us that the only way we're going to go to heaven is by believing in Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
But he does tell us to do good works and to, to get involved and to give back, to people who are in need. So I feel that God has blessed me so much and he's forgiven me so much. I'm a sinner saved by grace, man, saved by his grace. So I feel like it's rightfully so that I go out and give back to the community. So I feel like I needed just to get more involved, for a while I was not doing that. I was just like enjoying the fruits of whatever God was giving me, but I was not giving back. And I felt like I was being selfish in that manner, but not, taking time off my own schedule, and being able to, go visit a YMCA or, go and perform for somebody that has never gotten the chance to see me perform, and go just talk to them in good spirits and tell them to believe in their dreams, because anything is possible, or simply give away food or something to a homeless man or give a t-shirt, something that I know I have to give to somebody.
And you went to your own high school too.
I went to my own high school, man, and I love that. I love doing that because as a kid when I was in high school, I never saw that. I never saw an actual artist or a celebrity go, and speak to the kids, speak to me, because I wanted to see that. I wanted to hear that. So I got involved in that, and I went to speak to the, to the principal and to the ASB advisor there at the time. I think it was Mr. Chavez at the time in Southwest. And he was like, come on by, hey, man, we'll come and, we'll support and, we'll do whatever, And so I didn't know that they were actually going to call the news and all that stuff, but they ended up calling the news, that. And but I went in there, performed, spoke to the kids about just, career and, and just to teaching them to believe in themselves,
And thank you for coming out to my event too. I know it was, short notice.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was trying to hunt you down for a while, and I'm like,
sent me the message on Facebook.
Yeah, right? I sent you a message, and then I had I had Javier Lugo reach out to you.
That's
Javier
did reach out to me too.
I had
That's
Bethel
right.
reach out to you. I had Fausto reach out.
Soldiers for you, man.
Yeah, I was like, dude, I need to get Frankie over here, man, because this is a South San Diego thing.
Yeah, and, right, absolutely.
And I had the POD boys coming out.
Which was cool, by the way. I never actually, finally, that was my time to actually meet them. I had met, I had met Wuv before, and I met bass player Trey. I had met him before, but I had never met Sonny.
Yeah.
So it was cool to actually finally meet him.
You guys got to sit down and do lunch or something, man.
We definitely should.
Dude, it's a trip because, being from South San Diego, being from, same neighborhood. We went to Montgomery. You went to Southwest.
I went to Montgomery for summer school.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
See, I mean, it's the circle is so small there.
And 6 degrees of separation, man.
Yeah. But for you not to, like, connect with these guys.
Yeah.
And know it's,
after
it's,
so long.
Yeah.
And
it's a trip.
Just come to think that we were all from the South Bay area. Because I was raised out by 25th Street, right on Coronado Terrace.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right by the Nestor Elementary, like right after... When you get off Coronado Avenue.
Yeah, right off the 5. Yeah.
Literally that bridge that goes, I was right there in those apartment complexes. Yeah. There's a Shell, there's 7-Eleven.
Yeah. Right by the drive-in.
Right by the drive-in,
dude. So, and we're like right up the hill, right by Montgomery.
As a matter of fact, my parents are still there. Actually, they still live in the area.
What a trip!
But yeah, we were raised there. Yeah. That's where we're from.
And then we're all right there, same neighborhood,
Imperial Beach. And never met the guys. I never met the guys, man. Or probably we did cross paths, but we never knew who we were. Like, we didn't even know what was going on, you know? Yeah.
I think Sonny had said he had met you before, but
really? When did we meet?
I don't know, because I told him, hey, you know,
maybe at Lolita's Taco Shop, bro.
I was like, hey, Frankie wants to meet you, and he's all, I met Frankie.
No way.
Yeah, all right, well, here he's come chop it up with him real quick.
Maybe when he had the dreads. Back in that time.
But no, thanks for coming by, man, and it meant a lot to me. And the organization that we did it for was for Es Por Los Niños, and
awesome.
They help kids and families with HIV and AIDS and TJ, and what was the trip was the founder of that organization, her son died of AIDS, and he went to Montgomery, and lived right on Palm Avenue.
So close to where I was from.
And so I didn't know all this stuff. So after we had the event and we're going to go take the toys down to TJ, she was telling me all this stuff. And she was tripping out that the POD guys were there because her son would watch the POD videos.
Wow.
And he kept watching on YouTube, kept watching the MTV Cribs episode.
Oh, that's right.
And he was trying to figure out, like, dude, where do they live? And so he would be driving around the neighborhood because he wanted to meet POD. Yeah. And so she starts bawling because she's like, dude, you know, my son passed away now. He never got to meet POD. But just imagine knowing, like, dude, you know, for the organization. Yeah, that they help bring in some toys for an organization that his mom is putting together, you know. And it was just a trip, man, sitting there and hearing the way that it all, you know, God orchestrated it. You know, God was in the works and the details.
Oh,
you know?
He always works in the most mysterious ways, dude.
Yeah. So
amen to that.
So it was awesome, man. Thanks for doing that.
And absolutely, man.
And a couple things. I know. You draw, like, you're an artist.
Oh yeah, I love drawing my cartoons, man.
You're gonna be doing any art?
I was a big fan as a kid. You know, drawing fan. I used to make my own comic books, Conan, Rambo, and all that stuff. And we used to make up our own cartoon, you know. I wanted to be an animator. Yeah. I wanted to be a cartoon animator. I wanted to work for Disney and, you know, and do some architecture as well and all that stuff. But obviously the music took over. But I've had in mind to kind of like what John Lennon did with, you know, the characters, the cartoon stuff that he would draw. Yeah. And he, you know, he started, I think it was a baby clothing line. Mm-hmm. And I remember because our son, our firstborn, that was the theme of the whole, you know, the baby crib and all that. It was the John Lennon clothing that he had for the babies. And everything was all his drawings. Everything was all the stuff that he did. So I've had in mind to do something like that with the drawings that I've been able to do throughout the years. But I've never actually, you know, set it in stone. That would be kind of cool. Yeah.
You have to do an art show. I'd love to see
I've never been involved in an art show. Dude, I would love to, man. That would be actually pretty cool.
Let's do it. I'll help you put together some crazy art shows.
No way. Dude, we'll talk about that. I draw all this stuff, bro. I love graffiti. I love graffiti. So I've been able to do like, oh my gosh, my phone just started messing up on me.
Oh, because of the heat. Dude, we're out here in the sun.
But I literally drew like the graphics on the singles that I have right now on this new project that I'm breaking.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I drew all that. A friend of mine actually helped me with the you know, the Photoshop and all that stuff. But man, I do the graffiti stuff. I like to draw my own, you know, cartoon characters. So I would love to, man. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, let's do that, dude. I'll help you put that together, man.
Bro, that'd be amazing.
That'd be dope.
Yeah,
And speaking of breaking, why did you choose that concept?
Well, you know, the whole freestyle stuff I've loved since I was a kid. I grew up with, you know, freestyle music. And I'm an 80s kid, man. I love, you know, all the stuff that's in the 80s. To me, the 80s is like the biggest music era and the best music era of all time. You know, starting from Michael, obviously. You know, going into like, you know, the Cyndi Laupers and, you know, the NXS, all the new wave stuff, you know, Depeche Mode, the electronic music, the dance music. For me, I grew up with all of that. So I just wanted to pay homage to those artists that inspired me as a kid. Yeah. So breaking, you know, that was the whole idea behind that style of music, and coming out with the single for Breakin', and obviously now with Let the Music Take Control, which is featuring George Lamond, who was an inspiration.
Full circle, you know,
yeah, an inspiration of mine as a kid. Now it just so happened that we're good friends, and we decided to work on this song together. So, and I'm putting the project together now. I actually have Stevie B on one song.
Oh, nice.
I have TKA on another song. And I have Cynthia, which is another iconic, legendary freestyle artist that sang with Johnny O on a song. And so I'm putting this whole entire project together. The project is called More Than the Music. And I'm just putting out singles right now, just independently, just doing it myself. And, you know, working the whole marketing and all that stuff and on through iTunes, TuneCore. So I'm excited, man. I'm excited about it. I'm putting everything out on my own, putting all the... You know, basically just putting the money out of my own pocket, doing the videos, finally shooting videos here in San Diego. I've never shot a video here in San Diego, so Breakin' was the first one. You know, so working it, man.
How important do you think it should be, or that it is, for an artist to invest in himself, whether it's music videos or publicists or whatever it is? How important is that?
I think it's very important, because right there you are taking matters into your own hands, and when you invest, you feel more like you own this project. This is yours. This is your baby.
Yeah.
So it's very important for us to invest in ourselves, because if we don't do it, no one else will.
Yeah.
You know. So we need to expand, and by investing in yourself, you know, obviously your project comes out even better, 100 times better than allowing somebody else do it for you. You feel like you have more of a, there's more, it's an emotional attachment to the project. So you're putting all the love, all that TLC that it requires for it to be successful. Yeah. You're putting it all into the project. So I think it's you know, definitely something that we all must do in order for our projects to become a success.
Yeah. Well, you know, coming from being on a major label to independent and then investing in yourself like that, how does an independent artist stay relevant coming from, you know, being in the machine of majors, you know, the major distribution?
How do you
stay relevant?
Well, I think you just got to be out there. You got to remain out there doing shows. You got to, you know, get out there and you know, if it's, you know, like we were talking about earlier, sometimes there's you know, events that are happening where radio, you know, might have all these artists, might have all these, you know, people performing. Get yourself involved in that show and stay idle to the fans. Keep putting out music. That's the only way that people will remember and not forget, because it's easy for the fans to, you know, not necessarily the fans, they don't forget because those are the diehard fans, but there's, you know, other people that might say, oh man, he sounds good, or oh, I like his song, but might not necessarily be a fan.
Mm-hmm.
So those people are the ones you want to grab. Those people are you want to get.
Get some,
you know,
new fans.
Yeah, get some new fans. And in order for you to do that is to stay relevant, to stay idle, to stay working, put out music every time that you, any chance that you get, put a video, you know, get a visual, because people might not remember every, you know, how you look like, and they want to see how you look like now.
Yeah.
And obviously your image, you know, stay clean, stay, you know, get with the program, what's happening out there in the world. Obviously, don't copy everybody, or don't copy the stuff that's out there, but at least kind of, you know, find the niche of how you can, you know, fit in that realm and make it your own. And that's how I try to stay idle in front of the fans.
You stay pretty in front of the fans on your social media as well. You do a lot.
Yeah,
you do a lot of video. You interact. How does that work out for you? Because I know you got, you know, you're pretty strong.
My wife gets annoyed every time. Dude. It's like, man, you're always filming yourself. I said, well, that's how you
got
to do
it. Yeah, you got to.
It's a business. Yeah. It's like Jay-Z said, I'm a businessman. You know, because you know,
that's one of my favorite lines right there.
Yeah, I love it, because you know, you're a walking billboard.
Yeah,
you're a walking billboard. I mean, if you don't do that, nobody else is gonna do it for you. So you got to go out there and stay idle. You know, do certain things that you're doing like this. I would probably grab the phone if my phone wasn't messed up.
Yeah, we should have done that.
If my phone wasn't messed up right now,
we didn't even go live. For those that are listening now, we were sitting out here for like an hour, 2 hours.
My wife already called.
Just having a conversation. But yeah, now we're like way deep into it. But speaking of the social media and everything, how do those that, not on your personal stuff, but how do people find you on social media?
Well, my social media, I'm just getting involved now on Snapchat. So I love Snapchat. I'm Frankie J. It's the letter I, the letter M, Frankie J. That's my Snapchat. So for those of you who don't know, you can find me there. My Twitter, my Instagram is The Real Frankie J. My Facebook is Frankie J Official. That's how you can find me there. My Periscope is The Real Frankie J. And I'm actually about to get a website now. It's TheRealFrankieJ.com. So it should be up pretty soon.
That's finally.
I'll keep you guys posted finally. But that's all my my networks there, and it's really me hitting everybody up, man. I really love to connect with the fans and reply every now and then, comment, and just see what's out there, you know, and see what people are liking, what people are not liking. I pay attention to the likes, believe it or not. I pay attention to the views, believe it or not, because I think that's how you find out in a way what the fans really are digging from you.
Is you got the YouTube channel too? Does
my YouTube channel, The Real Frankie J1? That's right.
What is it you're putting up on that? Because is it different than some of the stuff that you've been putting up on Facebook?
Well, just the videos. I'm really just posting videos. I should be doing more on that. Should stay more focused on the YouTube channel. I should be doing those little webisodes. That's what I need to be doing. But as of now, they're just videos. Just a couple of videos that are there. Breaking is there, the English version and the Spanglish version. There's a couple of videos, and I Had You There, which is a couple of other independent songs that I've done in the past. A song called How Beautiful You Are. There's a video there.
Who's doing your videos?
One of them, well, the one that we did here in San Diego, they're a company called Toro Films. They're from Whittier, California. Yeah. The ones before, it was a guy named Mike Ho that did the videos, which was just, independent as well. Now he's working with Jesse Torero.
A friend of mine was asking me because they used to call me in Toro.
For real?
Yeah, they're like, hey, man, did you do Frankie's videos? And I was like, nah, man, that's not me. They're like, you sure? It's just Toro on there. I was like, nah.
Toro Films.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah.
I was trying to go Facebook Live here, but we don't have enough. It's not letting me. It's just connection is not strong enough. But
I'm telling you, man, it's that Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Well, we're out here in Proctor Valley in crazy East Chula Vista, so we out in the boondocks.
Oh yeah.
But
dude.
But man, I know I've already taken a whole lot of your time, man. Maybe we can come
back. Oh man, it's all good.
And get updated and
absolutely
see what other stuff is coming up your way, but. You know, I appreciate your time. And
of course.
And is there anything you want to close with or anything else you want to plug up?
Oh, man. Well, just, follow me on all those social networks. It's really me hitting everybody up and just connecting with all the fans. Yeah. Obviously, stay tuned to all the new music that's coming out. I have a new single that I'm putting out, actually, for Father's Day. It's a song called I Promise You, which already has over 20 million views on YouTube. And that's just me without doing any marketing or promoting it. Wow. It's just kind of on its own.
That's awesome.
Through the grace of God, man. Yeah. So I'm excited about putting a video out finally to that.
That's awesome.
And so that's on Father's Day, June 19th, a song called I Promise You. It'll be available on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Shazam. I mean, you name it, Google Play. Right now I have a single that is already out called Let the Music Take Control featuring George Lamond. And the video is actually on its way. We'll be filming it in San Diego in July. George is coming down from New York to shoot it with me.
Wow.
Breaking is already out, so go get that.
Go buy that
on iTunes. And that's about it.
One thing I meant to ask and I forgot, but on Spotify, how does Spotify work for an artist?
Well, Spotify, what it is more of
a subscription. Yeah.
And you cannot download the music from Spotify. Yeah. It just allows you to hear it as many times as you want. I'm not sure exactly what they charge monthly, but it's a subscription.
It's like 12
fee,
bucks or something.
Something like that, 12 bucks. And that's, you know, that's how it works. I don't really
know. Are artists
know.
Getting paid from Spotify right now?
Yeah. Or? You get, you don't get an actual, like an iTunes where you mm-hmm. get the actual dollar for the song. I think it's a little less than that. I'm not really sure exactly the amount of cents that you get for your music, but I know that I see the statements that come in where, you know, you get the statements from Spotify, Pandora, Google Play, iTunes, you know, even Shazam. So there is nice. You know, you are getting some residuals from that.
Nice. Good.
Which is good.
Because I know there was some beef, like I think it was Taylor Swift or something.
That's
like
right.
That.
I know that, that they were having some kind of a...
Yeah, I'm not putting my stuff on there, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But but no.
I'm so putting my stuff there.
Everybody make sure you go out and cop the singles that that Frankie's got out and support. Can we expect you on anything else lately? Any other collabs? Or
yeah,
you,
actually, I just did a collaboration with Osomatli.
Wow.
I did a song. Osomatli. Oh, man, they're
amazing. They're going to be out here soon, right?
Yeah, they're going to be at the Del Mar Fair, actually. I think it's June or July. Yeah. I'm probably going to go out there and jam with them. They're,
nice.
We did a song called No Te Voy a Olvidar. It was a song by the Ángeles Azules. And it's funny because it's me, Huey Dunbar, but from DLG. I don't know if you remember DLG.
No.
But Huey Dunbar was amazing in the Latin side. On the Latin side, amazing singer. And so it's Osomatli, your boy Frankie J, Huey Dunbar, this kid named Justin, featured on the song. So I'm excited about that, man.
Nice.
And oh, actually, there's a girl that I'm working with. Her name is Jay Grace. She's got a single out, written and produced by yours truly.
Nice.
It's a song called Love Me, actually co-produced with Big City out of Norway. It's out on iTunes. Go get that. Go check out the video. It's already out on YouTube. And what else, man? I mean, I know there's a few other things
in
the works.
POD?
Would love to do something with POD, man. That'd be something totally different. Yeah. That I
can
think
imagine
would be
you
iconic.
Doing something with them, with Marcos, you know, on the guitar. And
dude, that
some,
would be.
Yeah,
you know what?
Awesome.
I just recently started doing a little bit of reggae.
Yeah.
And I know, does POD do anything?
Yeah, they do some reggae.
Have
Sonny,
they done some reggae stuff?
Sonny loves reggae. Dude.
I would love to do some kind of reggae joint with them because I think it'll be cool, especially if it's in English and in Spanish. Because I know Sonny speaks Spanish, right?
Yeah, here and there, yeah.
A little bit. Imagine if we did something like that.
But, I mean, you can do all the Spanish.
Well, tell Sonny.
Yeah, we got to link that up.
We could record it. We could record it here, or we could do it in my house.
Yeah, and also you're friends with Rey Mysterio. You're gonna be jumping in the ring anytime soon.
Bro, I don't know if I want to get that 619 done on me. No, right? Sir. Yeah,
kick to
nah,
the
but I love Oscar, man. Yeah. He's a great friend, and man, it'd be awesome to jump on the ring, man, and try to do something. Yeah. It'd be crazy. I'll sing the national anthem for him or something like
do
that.
Do something, yeah. I know he's doing the Mexico World Cup of wrestling coming up, of lucha.
Oh, I didn't know that. I need to talk to him about that.
Yeah, you should jump on that.
Where's that at?
I want to say it's, I don't think it's Monterrey, but I think it's
in Mexico.
It's in Mexico, yeah. So, hit up Conan.
Yeah, that's
for
a great
sure.
idea.
I'll reach out to
Conan. Connect
yeah.
me with Conan.
Yeah.
And I'll reach out to him because I know Ray probably... Oscar's probably busy too, so
yeah that would be
dope. It'd be a lot better to probably hit up Conan.
Yeah, it'd be dope, man, have you guys do all something together. See, to me, like I look at San Diego and I'm like, dude, I'd love all the forces to join up right here. And
man,
imagine, you know,
Voltron, bro.
For real, right?
Get all the lions together,
man. Well, there you have it, man. We spent way too much time taking up Frankie's time here, and we just meant to link up and have some coffee here and just talk on the mic, have a conversation, and it turned into hours. But,
yeah, it was awesome, man. I'll probably get my ears pulled by the wifey when I get home right now, but it's all good.
Blame it on me. Everyone else.
Blame
does.
It on Ruben.
Everyone else does. It's all good. Well, thank you, man, for your time, and
yeah, bro.
And
of
we'll
course.
Link up soon, and. Hopefully we can have you come out again and do some autographs for the
yeah,
tour drive
absolutely.
Again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And let's see what else we can make happen, man.
And thank you for the Starbucks, bro.
Yeah, man. Appreciate your time and, you know, love everything you're doing. And anything you need help with on my end, you know, let me know. And
thank you, man.
You're the man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, man. Well, thanks again for the love. And I'm excited. And, just want to let the fans know that God loves you, baby.
There you go. There you have it. All up in your ear hole. Make sure you guys...
Come on.
Share, subscribe, review, and get the word out, and you know, let everybody know what Frankie J is up to, and everyone, you know, thank you guys for listening in and showing all the love and support. Thank you guys, man. Ruben Torres, connected with Ruben Torres, all up in your ear hole. We are out of here.
Connected.